This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Right. Current time is 6:01, and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant.
And I'm Wesley.
And Mitch is out this week, so it's just me and Wes hanging out. Got a lot of cool stuff coming up. If you're listening right now, it's between 6 and 8, so that means it's Tech Talks. Thanks for joining us.
I mean, yeah, it is Tech Talks. What are we talking about today, Grant?
We got a lot of stuff coming up, but I think first, we decided we wanted to talk about the update, or not the update, but the... I lost the article. Here it is. I found it. It's coming to us from the International Business Times, and this is an article talking about the first synthetic neuron.
So, what's so important about having a synthetic neuron?
Well, let's actually take it back and step it back a second and ask the question, well, what's a neuron? And a neuron is one of the many synapses. It's a part of the nervous system. It's the single smallest unit of the nervous system. And when you string many neurons together, they will actually interact electrically, which then turns into a chemico-electric process. And so it's a combination of chemicals and electric pulses within your body that carries all of your sensory information that your body has. It controls your heartbeat. It connects all of your nerves to your brain. Optic nerves. That's everything that you have sense-wise.
Every thought, feeling, anything, right?
Generated by neurons. Ooh. Neurons are also the bulk of the mass of your brain. And
they're the things you kill when people tell you you're killing brain cells.
Yes, yes. Those are neurons. So your brain is a tremendously complex collection of neurons that are constantly interacting and shifting and growing and dying in your brain. It's not so common to see that happen when you're an adult, but when you're a child. And that's why we talk about the first several years of someone's life as being so, so important developmentally.
That's why the learning process is at such a young age.
Starts at such a young age, that's right. Because it actually, and this is proven, that there's a number of ways that the shape and density of parts of your brain change rapidly at a young age. And so there's actually a physical difference in the brain of someone who learns only one language growing up versus learning two languages growing up versus learning one as a child and then adding a second language to that. So it actually changes the way that your brain is physically hardwired. It's like it's like a computer that builds itself and decides what components it needs and does not.
Yeah, it just has a framework, and then it's like, today I need to add this, and I think I'm going to keep this for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happens is your brain realizes that these certain connections are stronger and more important, and they need to be strengthened, and it's kind of like the roads in a city. If the cars never drive on a given road, and they absolutely never drive on it, then why even bother have the road when you can destroy that part of the road and then go and use the resources somewhere else to make another lane on the highway?
It's like Lego roads, not like roads right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like Lego roads or, you know, anything that's atomic in nature that you can break up and move and put down somewhere else.
All the modular ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Your brain is incredibly modular, and that's what makes it so powerful. Likewise, IBM has developed a material that changes phase when exposed to electricity, which means that it has this kind of chemo-electrical reaction, which means that it acts very much like a neuron. They're calling it neuromorphic.
That sounds like the new Power Rangers.
It does. I know. It's actually a really cool
the
word.
We are the neuromorphic Power Rangers.
Yeah. So neuromorphism is the idea that someday we'll be able to build a computer not unlike our brains. And this would be a computer that would be capable of changing its actual physical processes, that it would actually be able to swap or build parts of its own by just rearranging itself.
So it's literally, it's optimizing itself to browse the internet one day, like through Chrome or Opera or something.
Yeah.
And then the next 15 minutes when you're like, oh, I want to play Battlefield on full maximum graphics.
And it reallocates its resources and changes around what routes are most important through the processor and realigns itself into something else altogether.
If that's not the niftiest darn thing you've heard today, I don't know what is.
I mean, this is just fascinating to me, the idea that with any given thing that you do on a computer, that you could optimize all of your computer's hardware to go in line with that.
It's like you don't even have to, like, theoretically you don't have to specify a build. You just have to specify your maximum power.
The maximum quanta of, like, whatever that you're willing to put into this.
Because, like, you're not going to have to specialize it for either, like, high performance of, like, a SolidWorks or a CAD function and or a graphics function like video games. You can do it for literally everything.
Yeah.
And have it work that way.
And so, realistically, what we're talking about here is the system, not unlike the brain, would self-optimize. So as you use a particular, and again, this is all very theoretical and this is still very distant, but as you use a piece of software more, it would become more and more aligned and more streamlined. Just naturally,
It's like building a path.
Yeah.
It's like the more you walk on it, the better it gets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not building a path as in, oh, this is a solid state. It's going to be the fact that this path is easier for it to walk down now.
Yes.
Because it already knows where it is. It'll just gain the muscle memory.
Yeah. Muscle memory is not a bad analogy here, because we're talking about multiple...
The baseline of muscles.
Multiple states and behaviors that your computer can learn to be in. And so you groom it to be good at different tasks. And then
you don't even groom it. You just do about your daily business, and
yeah,
it optimizes itself.
And so then the idea here is then even you could have behaviors that get programmed in, and you decide you want to send it into a particular mode. All it has to do is get warm enough to melt the connections and realign, kind of in a... The actual material is made out of a combination of gallium and silicon, but...
Gallium doesn't take much to heat up.
No.
Gallium heats up in your hand.
Yeah. And that's part of why it's so cool.
I think the only downside, just knowing that it's gallium and silica, is how are we going to keep it that cool? Like, how are we going to be able to keep a computer this cool so that it doesn't accidentally ruin the connections by heating up?
Here's the other part of the connection. It's the other part of it is germanium antimony telluride.
Oh,
which is a pretty...
It's got a very high melting point.
Yeah. It's a pretty heat-resistant alloy.
Yeah.
So, again, the details of this really haven't been released yet. The first papers on it are just coming forward, but I think there's a lot of promise in this as far as a flexible way of...
I mean, now you're not going to have just the settings on your computer that are video where it's like, oh, do you want to be in game mode or TV mode? Or power where it's, oh, you want to be in battery saving, high power, low power, most efficient.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to do that for literally everything on your computer.
And that's what's so wild about it is we talk about it just within the scope of computers, but that's not the only option for how this can be used. We can use this on...
We could replace body parts.
I mean, this idea works well with televisions, maybe not so much with phones, just because of the amount of temperatures they get exposed to. But there's a number of options here of how this could be used, and I think that's actually not a bad idea there, using it as, in a bionic capacity.
Yeah, because with, like, the bionic capacity, you've got, like, I don't know, sometimes you have just weird things that we can't replicate, like weird motions. Mm-hmm. I know my hand motion isn't helping everyone.
Yeah.
But you have weird motions in your arms and in your legs that you need a bionic for that's really just hard to replicate. And currently it takes, like, a bajillion servos to, like, actually replicate it.
Yeah.
Theoretically, we could get this down to less servos and better connections that may help move parts of your body so that you could actually, like, there's no such thing as bionics anymore. It's just, oh, I'm just going to replace this arm now.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a material here there that in the right situations, because it has this nervous kind of reaction, I think this would actually be a good candidate for something that would be electrically sensitive enough and kind of self-shaping enough that it would be a good candidate for actually restoring feeling to people who lose sensitivity in parts of their body because of accidents or deformities or what may have you. You know?
I mean, yeah, because it's the number one comparison is that it is a neutron.
It is. I mean,
it's a neuron, not a neutron. It is not Jimmy Neutron. It's just a neuron. But yeah, it's theoretically you could. This is as flexible as stem cells are.
Yeah.
This is the computer stem cell.
Yeah. That's what we've just begun to come across here is that this is the truly the blank slate of electronics. The idea that you could, and I think one of the greatest applications here is in the form of, like, high-speed electronics testing.
Because yeah, like prototyping
as
almost?
Far as prototyping, yeah. I think there's tremendous...
Something that you can code to it and say, maybe we're going to move this over right now.
Yeah, yeah. You can realign your circuits and rework your simulations almost instantly. I think there's a tremendous amount of potential here.
Yeah, I like it. So that's about all we need to talk about on this neuron-like substance. My web browser of it died. So would you read the headline again? It is from the International Business Times.
Yeah, yeah. That article was called World's First Artificial Neuron, IBM's Breakthrough Uses Phase-Changing Material. And I will link to that over on our Facebook page. You can catch up with us there. And we'll be posting articles all throughout the evening and all throughout the week. So if you want to catch up with us or if you want to ask us a question, feel free to shoot that our way. You can find us at facebook.com/WRFL Tech Talks. We'll be there all night.
You can also interact with us on the WRFL.fm website. Now we've got a discuss element in our playlist.
That's right. So if you want to see what we've been playing or have a chat with us, you can do that there.
Speaking of playing, we're going to be playing some music. This is where my specialty comes in. I'm going to be starting us off with some Matt and Kim off of their album Lightning. Then I've got the Front Bottoms with their song Ginger. And then I've got Coasts with their song Ocean off of their self-titled album. And then I've got I got a stack of fun stuff over here. Grant, can you see how fun that stuff is?
I can. I just realized that shaking my head, looking at you and nodding my head doesn't.
Grant and I's normal conversations are very nonverbal a lot of the times,
yeah.
So it's weird. So keep it locked and loaded right here, your only alternative left. I'm Wesley.
And I'm Grant.
And I guess we're Tech Talks today.
Yeah, you are Tech Talks
today. Rest in peace, Mitch. He's not dead, but he's hopefully resting. He deserves it.
Yeah.
And in the background all day, you're going to hear the best of Pokemon battle sounds and Pokemon music, because I'm going to switch up our background music.
Yeah.
So here is Matt and Kim with their song, Now.
The International Book Project is a nonprofit organization promoting literacy, education, and global friendship by sending over 200,000 books annually to schools, libraries, churches, community organizations, and Peace Corps volunteers throughout the world and the United States. The International Book Project offers friends the ability to sponsor a shipment of books and also accepts donated books from the public. More information is available at internationalbookproject.org or the bookstore on 1440 Delaware Avenue in Lexington. Welcome back. The current time is 6:32 and you were tuned in here to Tech Talks on WRFL. I'm Grant.
And I'm Wesley.
That's right. Wesley is joining us this week. Mitch is at home, so it's just me and Wes hanging out.
I am the other nerd on staff.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep. Fair. So what are we talking about now, Grant?
What are we talking about right now?
Meteor showers, right?
Yeah.
I'm not pronouncing the word.
Perseid.
Okay, Perseid. Meteor shower.
It's the meteor shower that's going to be happening later in this month. The peak is going to be August 11th and 12th, and it's going to be in, of course, at night, but it's going to be best.
Are you sure it's at night? Is it not early morning?
It's usually best in the early morning. It really depends on exactly where you are, though, as far as, because it happens particularly, it's more considered like late night if you're on the West Coast, but here on the East Coast, it's considered more of like early morning is the best time to be watching this. And so if you're looking to the north, there's going to be a tremendous amount of activity, like up to 200 meteors an hour kind of activity. So if you've never seen a meteor shower before, this is probably your best chance annually to do so.
Let's define meteor showers too, like, because that'll explain why this one is so important.
Yeah. So.
So meteor showers happen when, like, things enter the Earth's atmosphere? Like,
it really depends on the context. This can be anything from a large batch of roaming asteroids that produce very spectacular burn-ups to large chunks of ice. Or other dry ice, things like that, that enter the atmosphere and burn up really brilliantly. It can be a number of different things. And in fact, the Perseid shower is caused because there's a cloud of debris that Jupiter grabbed. It was kind of like asteroids and just kind of space junk. And Jupiter caught it and slung it into our inner part of the solar system where Earth and Venus and Mars are and Mercury. And so once a year, our orbit will line up where we'll get bombarded with a little bit of this material. And it provides, on top of being really spectacular to look at, it provides, when it lands on land and they can retrieve it, a tremendous amount of information for us about the larger space rocks that we can get a hold of.
Because soon we want a space rock mine.
Yeah, actually, it's looking better by the day, realistically.
Not only is it pretty, but it'll help with the idea of human exploration throughout the universe and the rest of the solar system.
Yeah, and that's one of the funny things about Earth, is Earth has a lot of things that are tremendously rare in the scope of space, but space has a lot of things that are tremendously rare relative to the Earth. There's entire comets made of nothing but dry ice and copper out.
We need both of those things actively in the world.
Yeah. There's whole asteroids that are made out of nothing but practically just iron floating around near Mars. I mean, these are all achievable things.
Huge gaseous clouds of helium. Yeah. Something that is something that we can't synthetically make on Earth. Something that slowly is like draining itself from our Earth supplies.
Yeah.
Think about that next time you have a balloon. Just think about your helium's going to waste.
Well, even more, it's that because helium is so buoyant, when it gets into the upper atmosphere, it gets skimmed off.
Yeah, it just disappears.
Yeah, that's true. We have an ever-diminishing supply of helium in a way that we don't really have a problem with a lot of the other gaseous elements. But no, it's going to be a tremendous amount of material that's coming in. NASA is calling it supercharged. That's Ooh. Their word for it, not mine. And it's just really surprising to me how much material there's going to be. And so normally a good asteroid shower, you might get, you know, one a minute is a good asteroid shower, honestly. But this meteor shower that we're about to go into this next week is up to 200 visible meteors per hour. So you're talking about like a light, a shooting star every 20 seconds.
That's like better than fireworks.
Yeah, that's like almost a fireworks grade show. And you'll be able to see it pretty much any time after the sun goes down, but it's going to be best in the early morning of the 11th.
So. I don't know. Is it going to be best in the early morning of the 11th? I was just joking around when it was early morning.
Yeah, that's the only time I'm going to...
It is actually early morning. All right. When it's usually best. But anyways, yeah. I don't know.
You'll be able to see it with your bare eyes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you really want to get fancy, if you bring just some normal binoculars, you'll have a really great view. You can spot them with your naked eye and then watch them through binoculars.
Watch out where you're looking through them with binoculars, though. You might get a plane in your view, and that might hurt your eyes. Those are planes are going to be bright compared to this.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about dim, star-like features. These are not tremendously bright, but they are very, very visible. They'll be on the kind of brightness as planets and stars. You know?
And unlike stars, you'll know exactly when these things are dying out of their light because it's not going to be light years away. It's going to be in your atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to see it burn up really brilliantly like a firework and maybe even have some kind of coloring to it when it burns up.
It may land near you.
Feasibly. But we're not really in the landing zone, I guess, so to say.
Hopefully.
It's all to the north of the U.S. It's going to be up in Canada. So that's Canada's problem, is what I'm getting at here.
We get the pretty parts. They have to deal with the actual, like, outrage of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that seems pretty good. Do we have anything else we want to talk about right now?
Something pretty quickly here is that Facebook is going to be realigning their algorithm because, as we've discussed before, Facebook is now the number one source of redistributed news on the internet.
It's not Reddit.
At one point, that was Google and Google News.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times in the past several years that Reddit's been on upticks and it looks like it's going to sweep up and overtake Google. And then last year, fully, strongly, thoroughly, Facebook took it and hasn't had a challenger since. They've completely come to dominate the redistributing of news around your social circle in a way that no one else online can touch. So what comes with that is a whole bunch of clickbait. Articles that have really misleading or confusing or just weird titles.
Let me give you some clickbait titles real quick. I like reading clickbait titles. When she looked under her couch and saw this, I was shocked.
He put garlic in his shoes. What happened next is hard to believe.
The dog barked at the delivery man, and his reaction was priceless.
That kind of junk.
All that and more if you just click this link, which will guaranteed give you a virus.
Point is, clickbait is necessarily a black and white kind of thing. There are more and less clickbaity titles and articles. So Facebook had people read a whole bunch of articles and analyze the headlines and say, yes, these headlines are clickbaity, they're not clickbaity. And from that, they got a sense of what it means to be an article that is clickbait. Facebook now actually has an understanding of that. And so it has a new algorithm that sorts through what your friends share and post, and it prunes out the stuff that looks and acts like clickbait.
Yeah, and like, slowly I've been noticing, because this has been in effect for a little over 24 hours now, right?
Yeah, it started up this week.
Yeah, things that aren't really on my Facebook feed right now is, I'm a big fan of George Takei, like, oh my, George Takei. Recently, out of his usual amount of posts that he has, he usually posts every approximately 20 to 30 minutes, most of them are getting caught up and, like, left out. Websites like 22 words are now just no longer available almost. You have to be historically liking 22-word based things. And 22 words is a conglomerate website which takes like Reddit and Twitter posts and just posts them in categories.
Yeah.
It takes Ask Reddit Answers and just makes it a list of like 22 to 31 things. So like I've gone for about a good 3 minutes scrolling through my like Facebook feed here, and I'm a Facebookaholic, I will admit that. And I've only seen 4 links from 22 words, 5 now. But like I haven't seen any of the clickbaity like political like stuff on my wall that I know is being shared. I can guarantee it's being shared.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen really anything from like the bigger baseline of the internet. There's very few people that are getting through this filter now, and I think that's actually really effective for being started this week.
Yeah. No, it's definitely going to be a noticeable effect, and I'm excited to see the impact that it has. It is worth noting that it actually has an impact on a page overall. The more that a website is found to be clickbait-like, the more it punishes that website in general as a link for being shared. And the more that a page on Facebook shares stuff that is clickbait,
the less it's going to be suggested.
Yes, it's actually going to punish that page directly, which should help reduce some of the viral spam. That, honestly, that's what it is. It's viral spam that gets into your Facebook feed.
And as it says, this is like their second attempt at a clickbait algorithm, where the first one was a like, click, back click, unlike based system. So it was based off of, okay, I see this article, I like it, I click it, oh, this article is actually clickbait, I'm going to go back and then I'm going to unlike it, which isn't how most people process Facebook links, as they found out. So most people like read through a whole thing before they like it, or if it is a video, they at least like watch a couple seconds of it, and that's why they have the inquiry now, because the inquiry is the only way to set the pattern, because you can't just take whatever somebody says, because liking and unliking a link, especially because they can't really have this algorithm work on mobile and non-mobile devices. Like, they could probably, like, their Facebook, they can do literally whatever now. Like, they could come into your house and ask you to come with them, and you probably will go with them. But, no, there's a lot of times on mobile devices where I've liked, unliked on accident because I'm trying to hit the little, like, delete button, or I'm trying to hit comment or something.
Yeah, and you just miss.
Yeah, and I just completely miss because I have big thumbs.
Yeah. And that's not an uncommon problem, that trying to click and missing and then re-clicking and maybe even missing again. It's understandable that wasn't a very good technique, but I think that they really managed to prune out a lot of the prepackaged garbage posts that are there. So,
which that's what I like, is that Facebook isn't saying this is to avoid spam and ads. They're just saying, we want content to be better on our website. They're doing it, honestly, to increase the quality and decrease the quantity. Because, like, I don't know. It seems very effective to try to get more quality on a social service. instead of a lot of spam ads like it is currently. So, I mean, I agree with what they're doing. I wholeheartedly put my trust in Facebook and their algorithms here.
Yeah.
Now, this really, really is bad for all these small businesses that just learned how to use clickbait, and now they're going to be...
punished.
They're going to be punished for being late into the scene.
Yeah. I mean, let's describe it what it is. Companies that continue to use Facebook as a way of writing misleading articles in order to get clicks are now going to be aggressively punished for it.
Yeah, like, basically, it's going to lead to the only person that can actually use clickbait is people that are going to probably pay through a wall, because I will make the bet that within 6 or 7 weeks, there will be a scandal where people can pay through the clickbait filter. It's happened before with Facebook.
Yeah, but I still have the expectation that Facebook's not going to compromise. I think they'll compromise a lot of things for the sake of promotion, but compromising their it's a security filter as far as quality content. I don't see them knocking that down for more cash.
I mean, honestly, do they need more cash? Grant's rolling his eyes at me right now.
I don't have an answer to that question.
Okay. So, you want to get back to some music for a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Let's take a break.
Let's play them into music. So we've talked about neurons, and we've talked about meteors, and we've talked about Facebook now. Next, we're going to probably talk about Tesla, correct?
Yep.
And we'll see what more things we can put on there.
Yeah, looks like got some talk about Android, the operating system, and some more updates from Google. So.
Okay. I'm just going to read back what we've been playing, because that was my part of this deal in business here. We heard Sandy by Oh Mercy at the end of that set, Oceans by Coast, Ginger by the Front Bottoms, and Now by Matt and Kim. Coming up, I have some Triceratops Jackson, some The Enigmatic Foe, and some Origami Ghosts, and probably some Unihorse, getting some local favorites in here for the 2 hours we have. So get a lot from it right here. This is
Tech Talks here on WRFL.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Hey, guys. This is Tech Talks. My name is Wesley.
My name's Grant. We're going to be here up until 8 o'clock, so you got another hour of technology, science, and news coming your way.
Little shout out to Mitch, who is currently trying to call us, and I'm not answering that phone.
Yeah. Fortunately, we're on air. So.
Sorry, Mitch.
But if you do want to call in, you can call in after we finish up this segment. We'll be glad to field your call and have a chat with you. And maybe bring some of those topics up on air. So
yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be able to cover these last three topics in our next talking segment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now. So the first one we got is everyone despises SolarCity deal except Tesla shareholders.
So this is coming back around to something that we were talking about a couple weeks ago, back when Elon Musk's master plan part due came out. And so there was this conversation, because one of the big bullet points that came out of that was, and this came from Elon Musk himself, that he wanted to break down the barriers between SolarCity, a company which makes solar panels, which he owns a large stake in, and Tesla, the car company.
That he also owns a large stake in.
So it's almost unheard of to see someone say, I have these two companies, and I own them both, and I'm going to just sort of smash them together and now have one.
Now want them to make one profit instead of two profits.
He wants to pull in SolarCity and use it as a resource for Tesla. Because we've seen Tesla develop these long-term storage, high-density, they call them power cells and power walls, very high-density batteries. And he wants to combine that with the product of Solar City, who's recently been a little shaky financially.
They've gone down 50% this year.
In order to bring all of that together as one product. And so, and you mentioned this off air, and I think you're probably right as an element of it, that he's using Tesla as a way of absorbing and in turn kind of protecting what's left of Solar City.
Yeah. So one of the biggest points in this article that we're reading is that everything Solar City does can be cheaper made in China.
And that's true, but that's also not the man that Musk is. And I can tell you this a little bit from seeing it kind of up close. A lot of people don't talk about this, but there's a tremendous number of car parts that are made for Teslas that are done here in the U.S.
Oh, right? No. Most Teslas are 90-some-odd percent made in America.
Yeah. And so he takes that both as a point of pride and an incredibly, incredibly, unbelievably meticulous level of expectations. The standard that gets set when they're trying to make new parts is just unbelievably, almost kind of unrealistic. And so,
as a car guy, Teslas are the most insane amount of meticulous and, like, effectively made vehicles. And the fact that now that these vehicles are having almost no defects and being mass-produced, these are details up until the point of almost McLaren details,
yeah.
But they're being mass-produced in a vehicle.
The fact that we're just now seeing issues at nearly the 100,000-mile mark on the original Tesla. It was S? S was the first model.
Yeah, I believe so.
On the original round of Model S's, they're just now starting to see issues. And yes, some of those issues have been more substantial, but it is worth noting that this is a man who at least wants to put quality on the way in to these vehicles. And so I think that's where he's coming from with this, is that even if it is cheaper to buy solar panels in bulk from China, I still don't think he would.
Yeah, and 100% guarantee Elon Musk does like resourcing mostly everything he can do here from the States. On top of that, he's been changing the culture that is business right now. He changed the technology culture, and now this is a shocking business culture aspect where he's merging two companies that he already owns a large share of.
I mean, you got it right there. He's long been doing things in the tech realm that have been inventive and aggressive, but we've never seen him take on the business world so forwardly and say, basically right now, Tesla as a company and Solar City as a company are saying, we don't really care what the standards are. We're going to move towards becoming one company. But Musk has said that he is going to sit out. He's going to abstain in the vote for merger.
He and every other shareholder he has called for an abstain vote of everyone that holds share in both Solar City and in Tesla.
And so it's going to be up to those Solar City members who are solely Solar City members.
And the Tesla members that are solely Tesla members.
Should be interesting.
It looks very interesting. My only concern as a former engineering student looking at it and like a friend of engineers is, where is the money going to lie and what is going to happen to contracts that are currently in place? Because he may have some ulterior motive. Like, I don't know what the research looks like on these, because the research for Tesla and for Solar City and everything Elon Musk does is very, very highly guarded. So I don't know how they, like, are going to do this and be able to maintain their research and how their research is going to do it. But I do believe that if this merger comes through without any government intervention and the shareholders allow it, it'll probably give us some of the biggest technological breakthroughs of the next couple of years.
Yeah. Realistically there, working back through what you just said, one, considering these aren't particularly huge companies, I really don't see regulatory intervention happening. This is not, you know, $100 billion merger or anything. You know, this is by all scales a pretty small one. But I think
it's $2.6 billion. Which is relatively medium.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not like astronomical, like the things that happen in the chip industry where you snatch up a $20 billion company, or in healthcare where routinely, you know,
you just pass around $10 billion worth of company and yeah, it just all goes everywhere.
So I really don't see regulatory being what stops them. I think their biggest concern comes from the SolarCity shareholders. Are they willing to take the leap here? Because this is completely uncertain. And
I think SolarCity shareholders that are going to be concerned here. It's going to be Tesla shareholders. Because Tesla's on the up and up.
Yeah.
And SolarCity's on the down and thing that flushes.
Yeah. I mean, if this all comes to be and it doesn't succeed, then you have Tesla holding the buck, and that's expensive. And should this not work, it could take both companies down.
And I don't think there's any worry about taking Tesla down, though. Tesla is a very big... They're a very footed company. They've already gone through what should be their biggest struggle, and that's being able to sell to dealerships in, like, the United States.
Yeah. But I think the point here is that they're making a move, and there is risk here. But
there's
so much opportunity to gain. We've never seen someone implement the kind of car, battery, solar all together, because all of this research comes together towards one element. We're talking about an electric car with a great battery and the ability to recharge it wherever you go. That's clearly
as it drives
where the lights are pointing on this, and that's fascinating to me.
I mean, quoted from Denison, Musk's vision from day one, 10 years ago, was to accelerate sustainable energy. And that's a bigger vision than building cars. There was quotes around that. So we've already seen Musk's vision by adding the whole, like, house packs over like the last couple of years. He's been releasing things where it's like, oh, we can power your house for 10 years off of this one power pack. And then they were super affordable, too. Because they were, like, under $6,000?
Yeah, I think the big ones were on somewhere south of 10. But one of the things that he's talking about is the idea of attaching a battery directly to these solar panels and having solar panels that hold charge. It would be an all-in-one unit that would go on your roof, it would chain together, and it'd basically be a big battery slapped to a solar panel on your roof.
I will replace my shingles with solar panels. I'm up for that.
I think there's just a lot of opportunity here.
And I know, like, of the opportunity, the biggest opportunity that's been about solar panels has definitely been the fact that solar panels are often very flimsy and breakable. But earlier this summer, tested the Adam Savage, Jamie Heineman project of post-Mythbusters, did a full-scale review on the SolarCity solar panels, and they were doing way better than anyone thought.
They're hardy. Again, we talk about the fact that there are cheaper alternatives. It's because that same insane, almost implosive amount of meticulousness, the kind of meticulousness that keeps people from ever getting off the ground, goes into those solar panels. And it will drive the people in your factory and the people in your design centers crazy, trying to get to the level of expectation that Musk has. But when you achieve that, you achieve something truly great. And so I think we're going to see, hopefully, these Solar City panels that are already proven to be pretty rugged only get more and more ruggedized, because that has been a huge issue.
And like, one of the bigger issues with the rugged panels is they're rugged, they're super effective, and they do their job. It's just production that's the cost here. Like, that's not, like, the problem with people isn't them complaining about the actual quality of the panel. It's the definitely, you know, the cost of making it. And they're literally, like, very, very, very close to getting a breakthrough in production to make these effective. Like, we saw a breakthrough last year with the graphing boards that they were starting to make. Grant's moving his computer parts around. Grant doesn't actually use a computer. He has just a bunch of parts connected to each other around here.
Yeah, just carry around all the raw parts.
No cases. Who needs a case here at WRFL? We just raw dog all the parts everywhere. So, like, as, like, we're the same with the Teslas, where there was something that clicked that made production super easy and made production effective, and then that's the same with the battery packs. That's all they're missing from making these solar panels effective.
They're one good contract. They're one good upgrade to their process. Honestly, they're one good cash injection away from hitting their stride when it comes to production, hitting the volume they need to make this effective. And I think that's...
And I think this is where it's going to be at.
Yeah.
This is going to be the effective hit for it. I think we're going to play a Grant spot real quick, and then we'll just come back and talk about... We've got...
Several other things.
Yeah.
Both Google involved, so keep it locked all the way to the left here. You're tuned in to WRFL Lexington. This is Tech Talks, and we'll be right back.
Yes, we will. And we're back here on the... I think we're... Are we on Democracy Now right now?
We're on Tech Talk.
I thought this was the grid.
No, this is Tech Talk.
Are we on the catacombs?
No, this is the Tech Talk. This is Tech Talks, Lexington's very own technology talk show. I'm Grant. Mitz is out this week. This week I am joined here with my friend and co-director here at the station.
I'm Wesley. Y'all know my voice. If you don't know my voice, you don't listen to enough WRFL.
When's your normal show?
2 to 4 p.m. on Fridays, but I won't be there tomorrow.
Okay.
Because we have a retreat.
Oh, that's right. But that's normally on Friday afternoons.
Yep, so if you've seen the WRFL playlist, you've seen it's under the Untitled Show, because not only is this Tech Talks, this is the Untitled Show 1.7.3. So that's how I name all my shows. That's how I name everything I do, is by the Untitled Show. I do a lot of random fills.
So, like, three, like, the third?
It's the third time this week.
Okay.
My week resets. So it's the seventh week of the Untitled Show, and it's the third of this week. Because I did one on my Friday show, is always 1.x.1. And then I did one that night from midnight to 3 a.m. And then I'm helping with this one.
Yep.
So this is like 2.5. Or no, because it can't be 2.5, because that's an extra point.
Yeah, you can do 4 decimal points. That's okay.
Sure. Yeah. So currently, this article I have pulled up, because Grant does all the article research. We're talking about phones.
Yeah.
What type of phone are we talking about?
Specifically, we're talking about Android. So Android is
specifically
coming out.
An LG phone.
Yeah, Android's coming out with their new operating system. It's 7.0, also known as API 24, I believe. And the first phone that is going to get the snag on the new operating system, which has been codenamed Nougat.
Comes after Marshmallow.
Yeah.
And as a husky gentleman, why do they keep naming this after candy? It just makes me hungry.
That's all the Android APKs have ever been named after, is the names. Actually, let's play a game real quick. This will be fun.
Is it an Android operating system?
Yes.
Or is it a candy that is not?
I am going to pick candies and foods, and I want you to tell me, is it a code name for an Android operating system?
All right, I think I can win this game.
First one?
Mm-hmm.
Cupcake.
No, it is not. Cupcake was not one of them, right?
Yeah, it was one of the first. It was level 3.
Oh, it was... Okay, so it was the third one.
Yeah.
Okay. Darn it. I'm 0 for 1 already.
Donut.
No, donut is not.
Donut was as well.
Was that one of the first three?
It was the next one, alphabetically, so it was number 4.
Oh, they're alphabetical.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next one that you got for me?
Eclair.
No.
Yes!
Really?
Yeah, really.
There was an Eclair-named Android operating system.
Yeah. It was level 5 and level 6.
Oh, okay. And then what's after that? A, B, C, D, E, F. What is F? Is it French vanilla? Or did they skip F?
They didn't skip F. They went with F.
Well, are you going to tell me F? Are you going to make me guess?
Frozen yogurt.
That's not the name.
Also known as Froyo.
Was it then? Was Froyo actually the name of this Android operating system?
Was it?
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Why are all the Android operating systems named so weirdly? Like, let's see. Froyo would have been, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Froyo was... When was Froyo? Froyo was 2.2.
Okay. And we're on 7.0 with Nougat.
Yeah.
So, theoretically, that could have been in the time when Orange Leaf was, like, super popular.
Yeah,
and the Froyo crave was going across the world in the United States. I'm a big fan of Froyo. We should stop talking about food. I will talk about food all day long.
I mean, we can keep going if you want.
Can we talk about technology and food?
Yeah, sure we can.
Can we talk about the sous vide system? Do you know what sous vide is?
No, I don't.
So sous vide, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong because I'm not looking it up. But sous vide is the concept of cooking meats through water baths.
Oh, okay.
So basically you keep your water at a regulated temperature of really, really hot. And you can cook like a steak in like 9 hours through the sous vide method. But so basically you're cooking the steak perfectly, so you don't have to do any like the weird testing on the grill and like checking with your hand to see what the temperature is and like if it's medium rare or whatever. And it cooks it to be very, very perfect and tender. And then after that, all you have to do is sear it. And these like devices to sous vide can go from like any range, and they've had like exponentially dropped in price to very, very affordable for consumer markets now. Like you can go on, am I allowed to say online outlets? I can't remember my rules. Like you can go on Amazon and find one.
Yeah. You can go online and find it, yeah.
You can go onto the internet and you can find it for under 2 Benjamins. Like, easily. And even the worst ones on the market still work very well, and like, they regulate water temperatures and circulate them in a bath. And the whole time, you can also just make it out of a cooler and a blowtorch if you are so in the market to constantly blowtorch a cooler.
I mean, I guess you can do it that way. That works.
You can. That was actually how they, did it to begin with before you had the really, like, effective water manipulators that could keep the temperature to exactly 172 degrees. Are we reeling it in?
Yeah.
Okay. let's reel it in back to the Nougat-like phone, which will go on the 720 by LG, supposedly to be released at the beginning of next month.
There's been a lot of speculation about that, but it looks like that will probably be unveiled and, like, shown off next month, but it probably won't actually be available until about
mid-October.
October or maybe even November. So
definitely in time for the holiday season.
Oh,
though.
Definitely.
It would actually, it might just do the, I don't know, it's not going to do the Apple thing where they underproduce it.
No, no, they haven't, certainly haven't had an issue with that.
Yeah.
But it should be interesting to see exactly how both LG and Android here play their cards, because Nougat's been pretty sought after. I mean, this is the biggest update since Lollipop, and that was over a year ago, so it should be interesting to see how all of this plays out. I think LG in particular is going to be up against a lot of stiff competition, because even if they're the first ones out the door and they get that little bit of a flagship of being the first one to launch with Nougat, you're going to have a swarm following them. Every major player, HTC, Motorola, Sony, Samsung,
OnePlus One,
they've all announced phones within the next 6 or so months.
But none of them have Nougat.
Gonna come Nougat primed, they're just all gonna be out in December.
Yeah. So, like, and then obviously once Nougat is officially released, probably early October will be when they officially release it, and it'll get a scandal leak release in late September, most likely.
Probably.
We're not going to see an Android-based phone on it until about February. Like, an Android made by Android?
Oh, yeah, an Android that's actually produced by Google and is called Nexus? Yeah, we're not going to see that until probably
February-ish.
Yeah, 'cause at the earliest.
Because that's the one thing I've been really admiring about the Android system is that they've been making their software as great as possible, and then matching it with insane amounts of, like, technical phoneware.
Oh, the phones that Nexus produces, that are part of that Nexus lineup, are second to none. They're phenomenal phones.
Honestly, right now, I am... If 15-year-old me could see me right now, he'd be super jealous of how good phones are.
It's honestly wild to me to see. And it's funny because phones have existed precisely in that range where the getting better, redoubling Moore's effect thing is very noticeable. I mean, you don't really notice it as much year to year on your desktop computer. And back, you know, about 5-10 years ago, we were in that range with laptops, where laptops were just getting insanely better constantly. But
laptops are still getting insanely better constantly.
Yeah, but it's not quite as noticeable in the day-to-day because you got over that threshold that took it from it can do some stuff to it can, you know, after you get past a certain threshold on a laptop, doing everything is doing everything. It just does it a little bit faster.
Yeah, like it's getting from being able to do it to the speed of doing it.
Yeah, and so that's what phones are going through right now, and they're just now, I think, really getting to the peak of that crazy arc of actually accomplishing things. I think we still got another year or two to go before we see phones really come into maturity in everything they're going to be able to do. I mean, we've already seen the battery lives in general grow tremendously.
We have curved screens. We have screens that are effective on... Yeah, they wrap and they're effective on more than one plane.
Yeah.
There is a multi-plane usage for these screens. I have a S7 Edge. I don't know if you've ever talked about what phone you have, Grant, on the show. But no. I have an Edge, and this thing is, like, it's so weird that, like, I came from Android-based phones, and, like, now I, like, the Android-made phones, and now I have a phone that the screen is sensitive everywhere, and the battery is insane and the light works. And it's like right now in the market, whatever you want as a consumer, you can find it.
Yeah.
There's, if you're focused on battery, you get an Android phone.
Yeah.
If you're focused on camera, go LG.
Yeah. It's been really, really nice to, and that's part of what I really love about the Android environment is that there's so many phones all running slightly different tweaks of the same operating system. It's truly a choose your flavor experience when it comes to getting an Android device. And I think that
as long as your flavor isn't connectability, and then if it's connectability, just go to an Apple product.
Yeah. If you want a seamless environment, Apple provides that, and it provides it very nicely.
But it doesn't let you do much.
I mean, I know that I harp on the fact that Apples are kind of locked up and limited, but we really don't often talk about the fact that
as an end user, they're perfect.
Plays together nicely.
Like, every person that is an end user with an Apple device is a perfect device for them.
It's seamless. Your phone, your laptop, your tablet all play together very nicely.
Like, the iMessenger app?
I understand completely why people love their iPhones.
Do you also understand that now that Facebook Messenger is a thing, we almost can replace iMessenger for Android?
Almost.
We're very, very close to replacing iMessenger and the iMessenger app system because you can Facebook call, you can Facebook video call, you can Facebook voice note, you can Facebook pay now.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, Facebook pay is the only way I pay my utilities to people.
But, I forgot that that's a thing.
Oh, yeah. And you can, like it may be Facebook taking something from Apple, but Facebook is trying to become the only thing in the world.
And honestly, as far as the social structure, they're doing a good job of it. It seems weird to say this, but I was skeptical starting about 3 or 4 years ago that Facebook was going to have the staying power to stay relevant, and that eventually it was just going to simmer off and do the MySpace thing and slip into obscurity eventually.
I thought Twitter was taking it over.
If you had talked to me, if we were having this conversation 3 years ago, I would say I have no doubt that by 2020, Facebook's really going to start to slide, and they're just going to be making desperate grabs. But I have no reason to believe that right now, looking at where they're at, where they're poised, how they're doing, the fact that they're still keeping their traction in user engagement. Facebook's not going anywhere. Google's not going anywhere. All of the base players are set in our game of the internet. The internet is established.
The internet, like,
all of these big players are established. There's nothing risky about Google anymore. There's nothing risky about Facebook or Twitter or Apple or any of these big players. They're a set and tried and true place.
Yeah, like, especially with the next topic we have, the 9.34 beta of Google Maps.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
You can get text-based alerts on parking. You get a no parking now, yeah. Or as it will say in Lexington, no. It'll continually just say, there's no parking here, I'm sorry.
But yeah, they're going to be teaming up with a couple of groups that are already keeping track of and mapping parking. They're going to be working on incorporating parking time into being, and this is where it gets really impressive, into part of your in-route travel time. So it'll say it's going to take you 20 minutes to get there, and then it's going to take you an extra 5 minutes to find a place to park and get across the street.
Yeah, and it, like, adding this time, kind of like when they started doing all, like, the public transportation, they're like, you have this much time here, and if the train is usually on its usual schedule and it's this far behind as it usually is, like 2 minutes or something, you're not going to miss your next train transfer. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So now it's taking literally all the public transportation knowledge it has and moving it to your own private transportation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's getting tremendously good at a combination of estimating and actually in some cities, in some cases, knowing exactly how many parking spots are available on what streets.
Which is insane, in all honesty.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's tremendously cool that
being able to connect to the databases that it's just now made, because it's just got the small connectors, because nobody really turns their maps off until they're done parking. Like,
yeah,
who really turns their maps off ever?
Why not have it help you seek out parking spots, which is where I think they're going with this, because there are a number of cities like Lexington where in some capacity a lot of the parking is controlled by the city. And so a lot of cities have actually made public their API and their databases so that you can see what parking spots on what street blocks are open. And it's aware of what spaces are available.
And if, like, the only problem with it I see right now is, you know, parking garages.
Yeah.
The parking garage idea, it's going to be able, like, we can't do this right now with GPS, but somehow if they include, like, Bluetooth beacons in there, they'll be able to tell you where the parking spots are in the garages, like, how high up they are. Because currently with the GPS, if you go in a parking garage, it thinks you're on the top floor of it.
It thinks you're on whatever floor it's meant to be.
Actually,
I have no idea.
Yeah, during the Louisville construction that just happened, if you tried to get onto the highway, the road, 2nd Street and, like, Main Street or something run under, like, underneath each other.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a 5-foot offshoot that you have to, like, go underneath and you drive under the road. So Google Maps was actually super ineffective driving from Indianapolis to Lexington for, like, 6 months, because after it would just route you in a circle over and over again, because it could not tell you how to get on the highway because it didn't know the road existed under GPS. But fixed recently with some Bluetooth additions and Bluetooth, like, locator beacons, it tells you that you're on the ground now and you're not 20 feet up in the air.
Fair enough.
So, also, one of my favorite parts about the beta is an always point north option, which I accidentally scroll all over my, like, I'll be on my phone and I'll just, like, oops, accidentally spin it, and I'm like, I don't know where north is anymore, and, like, the little arrow disappears.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really good option, and it's a way of locking the orientation of what you're seeing on your screen so that, as it implies, the map always faces north. So if you get disoriented, you just zoom in and out until you find your location. So
you zoom out a bunch, see the top border of the United States, and then zoom in. And then you'll kind of, like, figure yourself out. We've talked about a lot of stuff in the last 40 minutes. We've been talking for 40 minutes straight.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think we should give them some music. Do you want to just finish it off with music?
We got a couple music tracks coming at you. We'll be taking a break, and then we'll be headed out. Spencer is headed in for the Party Panda Power Hour. He'll be here at 8. So thanks for joining us this week here on Tech Talks. It's been a lot of fun. And
I've enjoyed being on Tech Talks and having someone to talk tech with.
All right. Well, thank you, Leslie, for being here. It's been a lot of fun. And I will see you next week. Is Mitch still out of town next week?
I don't know, but I'm guaranteed to work Friday morning, so I'll be asleep.
Okay. Well, I will be here next week. I think Mitch is going to be out, so we'll probably have another guest. And be sure to keep it locked all the way to the left here at WRFL Lexington. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys. Here's some music. I'm going to start you guys off with, I don't know. I'll just figure it out as I go along.